Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is writer, educator, speaker, Kwame Alexander. He's a New York Times best-selling author of 28 books, and we're talking about his latest book, The Undefeated. Kwame, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We're going to start out talking about The Undefeated, and it's funny, when I first looked at the book, I go, because you know the size and the format of it, it's okay, this is a book for young readers. Then I read the book, and I realized this is a book for everybody. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think the publisher says like 6 to 10. And my position is this is a book for 1 to 99.
Yeah.
It's a picture book. It's a gift book. It's a book of history. It's something that we all could sort of learn a little bit and be inspired by.
Well, it's a work of art is what it is, because here we have a poem that's very important to you that's illustrated by Kadir Nielsen, who is an amazing illustrator. And the way the whole thing flows is absolutely amazing. The first thing I thought of is, man, this is going to be a film. That's going to be the next step.
Really? A film?
Well, like an animation or something like that. I mean, can you imagine having your voiceover and then have the artwork somehow worked into the flow that it is in the book? You don't think that? I think that would be amazing. Oh.
Well, you know what? There is that. That already exists.
Where?
So where can you find that?
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain you can find that on Amazon.
Oh.
Yeah. If you go to the Undefeated page on Amazon, it should be there.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So somebody's bothered to actually do a short film about this.
Well, it's not the entire book. It's not the entire poem. It's an excerpt. So, you know, your idea, actually, that's pretty intriguing to do the whole piece. I like that.
Yeah, I would love. Well, the first thing I thought of, and it has to do with the flow, seeing both the pictures and the words together, it just propels you along as a reader. And this is a poem of yours. Let's talk about the history of it. Why did you write this, and when did you write this?
I started writing it in 2008 when President Obama was elected and my second daughter was born. And I wanted to show her how we got to this historic moment in our country, what that journey was like, that this would be the only president she would know for 8 years, a black man. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I wanted her to know the woes and the wonders, the challenges and the obstacles and the tragedies and the triumphs and how we got to that point. So I wrote that poem for her. And then about 8 years later, a friend of mine, Kevin Merida, founded a website called theundefeated.com in conjunction with ESPN. It was a website exploring race, culture, and sports. And he asked me to help launch it with a poem. And I remembered that poem that I had written for my daughter, which I initially called An American Story.
Huh.
And kind of retooled it and retitled it, This Is For Us, for The Undefeated. And it's now, of course, the book. And it's got its third iteration as The Undefeated.
Did you perform this poem a lot?
Like
stand up in front of a group and perform it?
In the past 30 days, I've probably performed it about 50 times.
Oh, my God, because I was going to ask you to read this poem, but I feel really bad if you've done this 50 times. That's like, you know, you don't want to go there with an artist, but, I mean, would you want to read the poem?
I love it.
I mean, I love the poem. It would, like I said, it would make my year to hear you read this poem, but
I'm happy to do it.
Why don't we do that now, and then we'll talk more about it afterwards.
This is for the unforgettable, the swift and sweet ones who hurdled history and opened a world of possible. The ones who survived America by any means necessary, and the ones who didn't. This is for the undeniable, the ones who scored with chains on one hand and faith in the other. This is for the unflappable, the sophisticated ones who box adversity and tackle vision, who shine their light for the world to see and don't stop till the break of dawn. This is for the unafraid, the audacious ones who carry the red, white, and weary blues on the battlefield to save an imperfect union. The righteous marching ones who sang, "We shall not be moved because black lives matter." This is for the unspeakable. This is for the unspeakable. This is for the unspeakable. This is for the unlimited, unstoppable ones, the dreamers and doers who swim across the big sea of our imagination and show us the majestic shores of the promised land. The Wilma Rudolphs, the Muhammad Ali's, the Althea Gibsons, the Jesse Owens's, the Jordans and the LeBrons, the Serenas and the Sheryls, the Reese Whitley's and the Undiscovered. This is for the unbelievable, the We Real Cool ones. This is for the unbending, the Black as the Night is Beautiful ones. This is for the underdogs and the uncertain, the unspoken but no longer untitled. This is for the undefeated. This is for the undefeated. This is for you and you and you and you. This is for us.
Has your daughter seen you perform it?
She has.
And her reaction? I can only imagine.
Her reaction is, I mean, that's amazing, Dad.
I know.
Now, can you go and get me an iPhone? Like, I think, you know, your own kid, I know.
And the funny thing is, they're just going to expect you to be that amazing all the time now, because that's the right way you are.
Well, where I see it impacting her is in her interactions and experiences in her life. So
right.
At school, she had an incident where a kid said something that was at best just a bit inappropriate. At worst, it was racist. And she responded to it, and she called the student, her colleague, her friend on it. And so I see it in how she holds her head high. I see
cool.
it in how she interacts in the world. That's where I see the impact. But with me, yeah, it's all about, can I get a phone?
I want to talk to you about here you have this powerful work, a powerful poem. Now you're going to put illustrations to it. How did you do this? How did you work with Kadir Nelson and set it out so that the illustrations flow like the poem?
I didn't. I had no say in
his
work. Nah, man. In fact, I gave Kadir a note on one of his early sketches, and his response was, Kwame, I didn't give you any notes on your poem, so don't bother me now while I'm working.
Whoa.
And it was kind of funny.
Well, excuse me.
And you know, but it kind of makes sense, because he's a genius.
He is a genius.
He's a masterpiece.
This whole thing, as both the paintings and the words, it needs to be like mounted permanently somewhere, like in a museum or something like that, like on the walls of a museum, like writ large. That would be like fantastic.
I agree completely. I mean, working with that cat is just, it was an honor and a blessing and a big surprise. And
oh man, I can't believe you worked out that way, because it's so perfectly interwoven with the poem.
Oh yeah, and that's, a lot of it has to do with his vision.
Yeah.
He chose the people, he chose the faces, and our words and his art just sort of work together.
Was there anybody that wasn't represented that you really wanted to, you wish had been in there?
A million people. But I think everybody who's supposed to be in there is in there.
That's right. You can't argue with any of the ones that are included.
Exactly.
There's one interesting element, though. Maybe you don't know the answer to this, and I should interview him, which I'd love to do. There's a great egret that's seen in the background that flies throughout the entire poem, and it's sort of this weird symbol. And do you know anything about the meaning of that?
Well, from my knowledge, it has to do with when I think of ancient Egypt, and mm-hmm. when I think of birds, or when I think of antiquity.
Mm.
Egrets sort of symbolize strength and peace and sort of this pure calmness.
Huh.
And I think, you know, these birds sort of symbolize the journey, the struggles of African Americans in this country, and how we've had to be persistent. We've had to have that grit. We've had to be patient. We've had to, you know, maintain some sort of peace in the storm. And as Langston Hughes would say, laughing to keep from crying. And I think,
wow,
we survive. We not only survive, we thrive. And so I think it speaks to that.
I'm an ornithologist, and here's the story about the great egret. It was almost wiped out. People were killing them by the millions for the feathers for hats. And finally, the Audubon Society came in and stopped it. That's why we have great egrets today. They just persisted. They just persisted despite every freaking odd of people doing crap stuff to them. And when I look at that, whenever I see one fly, it's like grace personified. It's a powerful, it's a huge bird. It's a powerful bird, but it's a bird who has survived. And despite everything, is this incredible, graceful bird that's flying across. That's what I took away from my own interpretation. But it has that kind of meaning to it. You know, this is a bird that's a survivor that really fits in with the undefeated.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. I'm going to borrow that and do my own little research, because I think that mirrors exactly what, you know, it's a great metaphor for the struggle, for the tragedy and the triumph of.
What happened is in the South, they have these great nesting colonies, and people would just go in and bang them away by the hundreds and thousands, and they would all end up on rich ladies' hats. Which is I know there's deeper meanings there, and but I want to talk about you yourself now, because this is just one stop in a long journey that you've taken. Talk to me about being a poet. You do a lot of other things too, but when did you start writing poetry as a person? Did you start as a child? Did you start?
When I was 12 years old, I wrote a poem for my mother on Mother's Day, and it was a horrible poem, but she loved it.
Of course she loves it. It's your mother.
Yeah. So that sort of gave me the confidence to sort of think of myself as a writer.
But at what point did you feel confident enough to call yourself a writer? That's what I am. That's what I do, among other things. But
probably around college. In college, I had a professor named Nikki Giovanni, who was a pretty accomplished poet. And she sort of helped me understand how to craft a poem, how to make words dance on the page, how to be interesting.
Oh, wow.
And sort of taking her class made me understand, gave me the confidence to think that I could be a writer. And so that was in college. And then I just began writing more and more poems, writing love poems to get dates.
Okay, stop. So stop. Wait, Kwame, stop there. Stop there.
Yep.
Did it work?
Of course. I ended up writing a poem a day to this woman I met, and she ended up marrying me. So it worked. And I guess that built even more confidence. So it was definitely around college where I said, I think I want to be a writer.
Wow. Now, central to your work, and you have a large body of work, is the belief in the power of poetry and literature to engage, inspire, and empower. And when I look at all the stuff that you do, it's like you're a man on a mission. Is that safe to say? Would you own up to that?
Yeah, I've always believed that writing is, you know, especially for children, is sacred work. And I believe that you know, my parents sort of raised me to care about this world and to make it a better place, not only for me, but for those I care about and other people. And so I do have this sort of plan to change the world, to make it a better place. And my tools are pen and paper, and my tools are words, and my tools are books that are going to hopefully inspire and entertain and educate and empower young people. So yeah, I want to help the young people imagine a better world, and I want to do that through writing books. So that's my big plan.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is writer, educator, speaker Kwame Alexander, and he's the New York Times bestselling author of 28 books. Oh man. And we are talking about just his latest book. We were talking about The Undefeated, which is really a work of art between an artist and a poet. That really just sort of is a very unique and really worthwhile picking up and reading and looking at. Now, to that end, that you believe in the importance of reading and poetry, You actually are founding editor of an imprint of Houghton Mifflin and Harcourt, VersaFi. That's a big deal to be to do that. Talk to me about why that was important to you.
I started a publishing company back in the early 90s, and my goal was to offer opportunities to writers, in particular poets, who people weren't publishing. And I thought I could do that. I tried it for 10 years. I had some modicum of success, but not enough to justify, you know, going broke. So I had to close it down.
Oh.
And fast forward, you know, 10, 15 years later, and Houghton Mifflin approached me about having my own imprint.
Wow.
There and being able to publish authors. And I thought, wow, this is great. I don't have to fund it. I've got this, you know, sort of humongous marketing and distribution outlet, and this is a way for me to sort of ramp up my vision for making the publishing more inclusive, for making mm-hmm. for giving more voices an opportunity to share their work, and for finding other Kwamis out there who had something to say but just didn't have the outlet. And so VersaFi is that place, and we just launched the first four books. And pretty excited about it.
Let's talk about what four books did you launch?
A middle grade novel called The Last Day of Summer, which is sort of like The Hardy Boys meets The Phantom Toll Booth.
Whoa, and, whoa.
Yeah.
Are there illustrations? Are there illustrations to that?
There are some illustrations, which is really cool. There's a young adult novel in verse called White Rose, which is based on the White Rose Society. Sophie Scholl and her German friends, teenagers who resisted and fought against Hitler's regime and ended up dying as a result, getting executed as a result. So it's a story of resistance. It really speaks to young people even today. And then, of course, The Undefeated and another picture book called Vamos, Let's Go to Market by Raul.
Raul, I know Raul really well.
You know Raul?
Of course I do. I've got some of Raul's original artwork in my home, and I want to get to interview. I've talked to him about his other books, but I've got to wait in line to interview him about this one because he's going all over the United States talking about this book. I don't think he has a moment to himself.
No, he doesn't. And it's a beautiful book, man. It's sort of
he's a character. I love Raul. Not only is he a great children's book author and illustrator, but he's an artist in his own right, and his own work is just phenomenal to look at.
It really is. We had the opportunity to travel the entire VersaFi team.
Oh, wow.
Including Raul for 1 week on a tour bus beginning of April. And we traveled up and down the East, started in New York and went down to D.C. And we really got a chance to meet thousands of kids, interact with parents and teachers and librarians.
Nice.
And he's just he's a great guy and a great artist.
Oh, man, he's incredible. He's one of a kind. Talk to me about Page to Stage, your writing workshop. And I want to mention that on your website, there's a really nice video of you talking about this. But when did that start, Page to Stage?
Well, it's called The Right Thing. I've sort of changed the name of it.
But, okay.
The same idea. It's a writing and publishing workshop that I started back in 2006, where I teach writers, young people, teenagers, how to write and publish a book. And I did the program in 76 schools. And so the kids learn how to craft a publishable poem or story, and then they learn how to publish. They design a cover. They order a barcode. They proofread text. They write the introduction. They do all the work. They take ownership of this writing and publishing process, and the end result is a paperback book. And so we did the program, about 10,000 kids in 76 schools on three continents. So it was a great program, and now I've adapted it into this book called The Right Thing to help teachers do the same thing.
Talk a little bit about how important and how revelatory it is to young people to put out their own book so somebody else can read it. First of all, their own writing, and then go through the whole process of putting it together and publishing. It changes lives.
It really does. I did a program the program at a school on Long Island, and there was this kid who didn't talk, and teachers were saying he was kind of troubled and that I should watch out. And by the end of the workshop, we had finished and published a book, and at the big book signing that we had, he was talking a mile a minute to a TV reporter and talking about how he was now going to write his second book, and see, it sort of found his voice. What writing does, it allows young people to find their voice. It allows them to lift their voice. It triggers their confidence. Most importantly, when they're sharing what they've written and other people are reading it, it allows them to become more human. And I think that's ultimately the best thing that can happen.
There was a title of one of their books that's in your video that the title just alone knocked my socks off. Find Me Beyond Statistics Inside Teardrops.
These were kids in Charleston, South Carolina who, Jesus. You know, their school was voted one of the top 10 worst schools in the country. And nobody really expected them to be able to succeed. And in particular with this program of kids writing and publishing a book. And they did it. And they did it with verve and enthusiasm and expertise. And they dared people to tell them that they couldn't succeed in their lives. And I think that title sort of said, look beyond the statistics.
Do you think there's a problem with people just not reading anymore? Adults, young people, I don't care who they are. Nobody seems to be reading anymore.
No, I don't think it's a problem. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in this business.
You're making them read.
Yeah, exactly. You write books that are interesting and entertaining, and you write intelligent entertainment, you'll get readers. Like, I try to spend my time on trying to create work, literature, that is going to engage and excite empower readers. And I'll leave that sort of conversation and that discussion to the dynamic radio journalist like yourself.
Oh, nice one. I'm on to you. You've done a lot of other things. When I was reading your bio on your website, you did a lot of cultural exchanges with Brazil, Italy, Singapore, Ghana. And then you were involved in the Barbara Alexander Memorial Library and Health Clinic?
Yeah, that was a library and a health clinic that I built with a bunch of friends.
Okay. You got to tell me about that. I mean, you're making it sound like, oh, yeah, everybody does this all the time. That's a huge thing.
It was a huge project. It was 5 years.
Wow.
It was quite a bit of money. But ultimately, it was a village. Rural Ghana of 200 kids and, you know, 100 adults. When we first went to the village in 2012, there was one book in the entire school. And so my deal was I believe in the power of words to transform lives. And I wanted books in that village. At the same time, I realized that there was no health clinic. And probably one of the biggest literacy issues is health. Like, if you're not well, if you're not here, then reading and writing is of no importance.
That's right.
And so we decided to build both, and we named it after my mother. And it opened last summer. And it was part of my life's work.
I first of all, I find the idea really unique to combine a library and a health clinic. But it makes total sense when you talk about it. I mean, it makes absolute sense when you talk about it. And it sort of strikes me that more people need to think that way, sort of outside of the norm of how to design things and bring things to people, is to really look at what people need and not what you think they need.
Right. That's it. And my mistake was I had thought that they just needed a library.
Right, because that's what you do.
And the people in the village had to sort of wake me up, and they helped me realize, because I didn't come to it on my own. They helped me realize that, you know, what we really need is a health clinic.
Can I just ask you about one of your other books? I'm going to have to read all your other stuff. You have a book called The Playbook, 52 Rules to Help You Aim, Shoot, and Score in This Game of Life. Is that a self-help book?
Dribble, fake, shoot, miss. Dribble, fake, shoot, miss. Dribble, fake, shoot, miss. Dribble, fake, shoot, swish.
Whoa. That's a performance piece in and of itself.
That's what it is. It's a book about rules that you use on the court and in your life. And I wanted to write that kind of book for kids, you know, so they could have that
But it also sounds like a book for adults. This is another case where I think adults would get a lot out of this, too.
I told you, Man, I write books for $1 to $99.
What's your next project? What are you going to work on? Or is that, you can't talk about that?
I'm writing a TV series.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep, I'm writing a TV series.
Is it going to be fiction or fact?
It's based on one of my novels.
Uh-huh. You're being coy, but that's okay. Do you already have somebody who's going to pick it up? Don't mention names.
Stay tuned, my friend. Stay tuned.
Would you be willing to do an interview when that finally becomes a done deal?
Absolutely.
Wow. Is this your first TV script?
No. I wrote an episode of a show called Hip Hop Harry, which was on Discovery and the Learning Channel like 10 years ago. It was like a Barney with a hip-hop feel. Imagine that.
Yeah, that's going to keep me up at night. Did you enjoy scripting? It's a different kind of writing. It's a really different kind of writing.
Yeah, I love it.
You do?
Yeah.
Some movies next?
Yeah, movies, TV, anything, any opportunity, plays, any opportunity to be able to sort of create characters with compelling stories. I'm all down for it.
The man with the plan. That's it. Thank you so much for your time. My guest tonight has been writer, educator, speaker, Kwame Alexander, New York Times bestselling author of 28 books, soon to be producer and writer of a TV series. And we're talking about his latest book, The Undefeated. You have to pick this up. It's an experience reading it. Kwame, it's been a real pleasure.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.